Hello there. Today is Tuesday, March 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, more concerns over whether a committee investigating Russia's ties to the U.S. election will be impartial.
I think that there's a sufficient question that has been raised in the public as to whether the chair can continue to oversee the Russia investigation or anything involving the transition team.
Why is the U.S. sitting out a nuclear disarmament deal? Young people in America are looking for the best new tech innovations to use on spring break. Also ahead, the latest new romance in Hollywood. It's all on today's International Edition. House Intelligence Committee Chair Devin Nunes said Monday that he's got no intention of recusing himself from the committee's investigation into Russian interference into the 2016 presidential election. His colleague, ranking Democrat committee member Representative Adam Schiff, has called on Nunes to step down, saying it's not a recommendation he makes lightly, but that it would be difficult for the public to maintain faith in the investigation.
I think that it's appropriate at this point for the chair to recuse himself. And I think the two issues are you have an investigation of Russia that implicates potentially the Trump campaign. And the chairman is now making assertions about whether proper minimizations procedures were followed in incidental collection of the transition team. Given that the chair was a member of that transition team, I don't think it's appropriate that he oversee that kind of investigation or oversight. So I think it would be in the chairman's interest as well as the committee's for him to recuse himself. And it's my hope that he'll do so.
Last week, Nunes announced that he received information from an undisclosed source that conversations by President Trump and his staff had been swept up in incidental collection activities by U.S. spy agencies targeting foreign agents. Nunes spoke with reporters and the president about the material without informing any of the other members of the House Intelligence Committee, which angered Democrats who questioned Nunes's credibility. Nunes later apologized to the committee for not telling them. Joining me now for more on this is former CIA officer and author of The Interrogator, Glenn Carl. Glenn, why is it a problem for Congressman Nunes to inform the president of what he felt was important information?
I think the issue there is that he met with somebody, obtained information, it appears, from a member of the White House staff, if not directly from Trump himself, and he didn't inform anybody either of the meeting before, after, or of its contents. We know that Nunes was part of the Trump transition team. So from that, he should have recused himself from any involvement in an investigation that touches upon anything to do with the Trump White House. But independent of that, we now hear from Nunes himself that he went to the White House a day before going public with the bizarre information that he won't share fully, that Trump and members of his entourage may have been peripherally picked up during intelligence operations to listen to people who are being investigated. At the least, as the Democratic leadership is now calling for, he should recuse himself from the investigation. I mean, Right. That's at a very minimum.
There are several Republicans also calling for him to recuse himself from the investigation so that it can be done impartially. There are also, of course, calls for a separate independent investigation so that the public has confidence that this is being done in a non-political fashion. Do you think that this committee can even do a fair investigation at this point in time?
I'm gravely concerned that the answer is no, it cannot be sullied, and that it is tainted. I have some experience with the oversight committees, and they are, frankly, very politicized, and the Republican chairman is clearly carrying the water of the White House. This is, at the very least, inappropriate. So for the integrity of the process, of the investigation, frankly, of the committee, and by extension, our government, Congress doing its work, he has to at least remove himself. And I think that the call by one member of Congress or more that he actually be removed from his position as chairman of the committee is absolutely merited.
He has canceled quite a few of these hearings. We've had several behind closed doors and open hearings canceled, so it's not really clear where this is going or what is happening here with this investigation. It's raising red flags for a lot of folks. We do know that a Senate committee investigating the situation with Russia is going to be hearing from the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, in the near future. And his potential meetings with some Russian bankers, is it?
We can call them Russian bankers, and they do exercise the function of Russian banker, but we know that these individuals were trained in the Russian intelligence university and that they have employees, direct deputies of the men of the individual that Kushner met with, who have been arrested by the FBI as Russian spies. That's a fact. So it's very alarming.
There just seem to be a lot of connections between Trump associates, Russian officials, Russian oligarchs, Russian bankers.
It's stunning. It's stunning. But let me emphasize, when we say Russian bankers, we are misleading ourselves. To the extent that they are bankers, they are acting as direct representatives only on the authority of Vladimir Putin himself. Because a lot of this is oligarch money going to oligarchs or funneled from oligarchs or being laundered. Whether it's, and even if it is above board, it is controlled and influenced directly by Vladimir Putin himself for Russian national ends, not because Glenn Carl wants to invest a few dollars in, you know, McDonald's or something. This is state activity from a kleptocracy. And two, very important, these banks are staffed frequently by, many of the employees are, Russian intelligence officers. Now, they say, oh, I've resigned, I don't do that anymore. Well, okay, do you want to believe that? So this is very disturbing, and it's a fact which we've established because the FBI has arrested and charged with espionage employees of these banks.
And lastly, former Vice President Dick Cheney made some news on Monday talking about Russia meddling in the U.S. presidential election could be an act of war. Is that going too far, or do you agree with him?
It is unusual, in which I agree completely with Vice President Cheney. This is, these grave acts of espionage, concerted, pervasive, from multiple origin, against the American election, against one candidate, in favor of the other, and with members of the White House staff, legitimately, I think, can be considered a casus belli, which is an act of war, yes.
All right. We appreciate your perspective. Former CIA officer and author of The Interrogator, Glenn Carl. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Senate panel delays action on the president's Supreme Court nominee as Democratic opposition grows. A Turkish singer and journalist on trial over a failed coup. Trump's son-in-law to lead a new White House Office of American Innovation. And Facebook's Messenger app will allow live location sharing. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced Monday the Justice Department will withdraw grant funds from local jurisdictions that do not comply with federal immigration laws. At a White House briefing, the nation's top law enforcement official said sanctuary jurisdictions endanger lives of every American and put the whole community at risk.
I strongly urge our nation's states and cities and counties to consider carefully the harm they are doing to their citizens by refusing to enforce our immigration laws and to rethink these policies. Such policies make their cities and states less safe. Public safety as well as national security are at stake and put them at risk of losing federal dollars.
Sanctuary jurisdictions, which include 600 sanctuary cities and counties as well as some states, according to the National Immigration Law Center, are jurisdictions that choose not to inform immigration officials when certain undocumented immigrants are released from official custody. Most often, these are immigrants charged with or convicted of minor crimes. An immigration policy analyst at the Libertarian Cato Institute, which advocates more liberal immigration laws, says several states have concluded that immigrants are less likely to commit crimes than people born in the U.S. Well, the United States, Russia, China, and more than a score of other countries are sitting out new talks at the United Nations toward a treaty that would ban nuclear weapons. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley and colleagues from Britain, France, and about 40 other nations gathered Monday outside the General Assembly to show opposition to the talks starting inside. Haley says the U.S. wants a nuclear weapons-free world, but has to be realistic about how to get there while protecting people.
There is nothing I want more for my family than a world with no nuclear weapons. But we have to be realistic. Is there anyone that believes that North Korea would agree to a ban on nuclear weapons? So what you would see is the General Assembly would go through in good faith trying to do something, but North Korea would be the one cheering, and all of us and the people we represent would be the ones at risk.
Well, she says the U.S. has already reduced its nuclear weapons by 85% under the decades-old nuclear non-proliferation treaty. More than 100 countries backed a General Assembly resolution that set up the talks. Backers of the proposed treaty say prohibiting nuclear weapons would be a powerful step toward eliminating them. Opening the meeting, Kim Won-soo, a Korean diplomat and special advisor to the U.N. Secretary General.
This conference is taking place against a backdrop of rising international tensions, renewed arms competition, and an absence of results in disarmament bodies.
Well, for more on this story, VOA's Victor Beatty talks to Brad Glosserman, executive director of Pacific Forum in Hawaii, and asks why the UN is pursuing the effort despite the decades-old nuclear non-proliferation treaty.
I think there's a sense of frustration among many of the participants to these negotiations that the NPT has not moved sufficiently towards the actual elimination of nuclear weapons disarmament. While that is part of the treaty, I think there's a sense that it has been successful in containing the spread of weapons, but not so successful in diminishing their number, reducing their number. And thus, this is, I think, the result of considerable frustration, frankly, with the process and a desire to jumpstart it.
Well, opponents of this new ban say that gradual disarmament is making a difference. The U.S. cutting its nuclear arsenal by 85%, Britain cutting its forces by over half. Isn't that progress?
Absolutely. And that's precisely the debate that's being held right now, is to what degree is the progress sufficient? To what degree do we need to move more quickly? What is realistic? What is pragmatic? There's a number of different claims that are being made. And a lot of it depends, if you will, where you stand depends on where you sit.
Even Japan, the only country to have suffered atomic attacks in 1945, voted against these talks, saying a lack of consensus over negotiations could undermine progress on effective nuclear disarmament.
Right. The Japanese are, like many American allies, are in a rather difficult position. They do not have nuclear weapons themselves, but depend on the American nuclear umbrella to protect them. And they are concerned that while they very, very much would like to see a world moving towards a world without nuclear weapons, the reality is that they do not trust many of their nuclear armed adversaries to honor this treaty, even if they were to sign it. And thus, they're concerned that the United States would be more inclined and more exposed, more ready to be held to these treaties, and they would thus, because they're relying on the American weapons, end up being exposed themselves. So they're, again, hoping that the process will move forward, but they're just very wary of the particular modality.
U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley said there is, quote, nothing I want more for my family than a world without nuclear weapons, but we have to be realistic. Is there anyone that believes North Korea would agree to a ban on nuclear weapons?
The North Koreans have said quite clearly that they would like to move towards a world without nuclear weapons, but they will only do it when the other nuclear weapons states move with them. And that's one of the unrealities, of course, of the North Korean nuclear bargaining position more generally. But that's the same position, quite frankly, as the Chinese and the Russians and even the Americans. And if you look at what Obama said in his Prague speech in 2009. As much as we would like to see a world without nuclear weapons, we have to acknowledge that they are a reality in today, and the United States will continue to hold on to its arsenal as long as its adversaries do. I think that's the responsible position. And so what you're going to see is, I think, a great deal of frustration among disarmament advocates who feel as though that logic is an excuse not to move forward with the system, with the process, and the perennial battle between the two.
Even Russia and China are not taking part in these talks. Is this ban dead before it begins?
I'm reluctant to say that, but I think yes.
All right. Well, we appreciate hearing from VOA's Victor Beatty, speaking with Brad Glosserman, Executive Director of Pacific Forum in Hawaii. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time Saturdays and Sundays on voanews.com and The Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues now. Well, here in the United States, we're approaching what's known as spring break, a time when students break from studies and go have some fun. Joining me now is my favorite gadget guru, reporter Chris Morris. You've got an article now for Fortune.com coming out that talks about the best in spring break gadgets. So, Chris, it is that time of year. I guess this sort of thing is important these days.
You know, the concentration levels at schools everywhere are just off the charts bad right now. Florida's getting a lot more crowded, so as you said, it must be spring break time, and here we are. It's interesting because, you know, you think of spring break and it's beer and beaches, and that's usually about all people think of. But there are some technological gadgets that can make it a little bit more entertaining. One of them I think that not a lot of people have heard of is called the Hover Camera Passport Drone. Now, you know, anything that's over about a half a pound that's a drone has to be registered with the FAA. This comes in right below that, and it can hover and take pictures. Essentially, think of it as a selfie drone. It flies inside and outside, records in 4K video, $599. It's actually turning to be a pretty popular item these days.
You wouldn't think of gadgets being so important for spring break, but I guess they are in this day and age.
Well, yeah, this generation of high school and college students, they grew up with technology, and so it's a part of their life. So it's coming with them on vacations and spring break. And the companies that make these products, they're actually getting very smart about what they put out so that it is friendly for families and millennials to take with them.
Well, Chris, a lot of people head south. They go to Florida and other places where it's a little bit warmer for spring break. Are there any suggestions for gadgets to take when you're heading to the beach?
You know, I've got two for you, actually. One is when you're at the beach, you want to listen to some music. And maybe you want to take the music, you know, out into the ocean with you. But beaches are crowded, and you can't blare your music while you're in the water because then you're just that obnoxious person on the beach. But Monster makes a thing called the Back Float Speaker. It is waterproof. It floats in the water with you, and it plays your music from your phone. You don't bring your phone in the ocean. That's a bad, bad idea, even if it's waterproof. And worst comes to worst, it can also act as a speakerphone. Now, this other one, this is a little bit unusual. It's a UPS, an uninterruptible power source, a battery backup. Usually you have those for your computer in your office, but why would you want to take this big battery to the beach? Well, it's not that much money. It's about $100 or so. What you can do, though, is charge your USB devices on that. It also holds enough power that you can plug in, say, a blender, and you can make margaritas right there on the beach.
Oh, my gosh. We are really getting spoiled with our gadgets.
We really are. But you know what? If you think about this from a college perspective, you're looking to make new friends, there is no quicker way to make new friends at spring break than with a margarita or daiquiri machine.
No kidding. Right on the beach. Wow. Spoiled Americans.
Exactly.
Do you have any great ideas as far as lost luggage? That would really ruin a vacation if you're heading somewhere for spring break.
There's a really handy device called the Tile, and it's a little square, maybe about the size of, fold a business card in half, it's about that big. Slip one of these things inside your suitcase, and if the item goes missing, it's missing in transit, it'll help you find it. Now, it uses Bluetooth, so you can keep up with it in the short and mid-range, but if it goes to South Dakota, let's say, instead of South Beach, you can get an alert whenever anyone else who is a Tile user comes within the range of your device, so you will know where your bag went to if the airport doesn't.
Wow, that's cool.
And for $25, that's a nice peace of mind.
All right, reporter Chris Morris's latest article on Fortune.com. Turning now to what's trending on social media, Andrew Palchewski is here. Hey, Andrew, what's happening?
So there's some changes going on to two of the most well-known and biggest social networks in the world.
Really?
We'll start with Facebook. Of course, Facebook is the biggest, 1.8 billion monthly active users around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And here in the U.S., they've launched a new feature today called Facebook Town Hall. Now, what this allows you to do is you go into the Town Hall area of Facebook. You can get it on your phone or desktop.
Mm-hmm.
You put in your address, and it brings up your entire list of elected representatives, everybody from president and vice president to your governor, state representatives, senators, members of Congress, everybody that represents you in any capacity of government from state to federal.
Huh.
And then what you can do with this list that populates, you have two options. You can click to follow them on Facebook, and then you can click to contact them and contact them via email or phone and get in touch with your representatives.
That could come in handy.
It definitely is, and especially as we've seen in the past few weeks, a lot
right.
of people have contacted their members of Congress with the health bill that
right.
was going forward. They had a lot of strong opinions on that.
Right.
This is a new way for people to get in contact with their representatives and be more civically minded.
Yeah, I think it seems like a lot more people are getting involved.
Absolutely, and it's something I think that they could emulate in other countries. Right now, this is just in
mm-hmm,
the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
but across the world with all those active users around the globe, this is something they could use in other democracies around the world.
And has it started yet?
Yep, it started today. So you can go on
Great.
Facebook and do that, Facebook Town Hall, if you're
cool.
in the U.S.
Cool. And what else is going on?
Well,
oh, you said there was another one.
Yes. So Twitter is the other big one, of course. It's been around for quite a while. They are testing out a paid subscription service for their TweetDeck platform. They acquired TweetDeck about 6 years ago. It's been integrated into part of Twitter. And they're starting to test some potential for a paid subscription service. Now, this news broke, of course, on Twitter. Somebody had a survey that Twitter sent them. They were an active TweetDeck user, and they said, we're trying to test out this advanced TweetDeck service. And now what this would be, would you would pay a subscription fee of some sort, and that would give you access to enhanced posting and monitoring tools, more analytics, priority customer support. Now, what do everybody use Twitter for? Everybody uses Twitter when there's breaking news or any kind of news to go there to react instantly. So the idea for this is that a lot of people who are professional journalists or
mm-hmm.
others who are trying
mm-hmm.
to exchange information quickly
mm-hmm.
might sign on for this professional service. So
huh.
we'll see if this takes hold. Twitter has had some money woes trying to close some gaps in the amount of earnings that they have. So this might be one way to do it, by charging some of their premier customers a subscription service and giving them some benefits in return.
All right. Andrew, thank you so much. As always, you can follow him on Twitter at APAL. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Now let's turn to the latest in Hollywood news. And for that, we're joined by Entertainment Tonight's senior news editor, Jennifer Perros. Hi, Jen. Sounds like we've got some romance to talk about.
Yes, you know, this is a new couple that kind of came out of nowhere, but everybody had thought that they had dated somewhere along the line all these years. But no, you know, Alex Rodriguez, formerly of the New York Yankees, and of course Jennifer Lopez, or how we like to call him now, J-Rod, are dating. It's been a few weeks, so it's definitely a new romance, but sources are telling ET that they have been inseparable, they are really happy together, and they're just kind of waiting to see where it takes them. And they had a PDA-filled weekend in Los Angeles. They have been staying at the Ritzy Hotel Bel Air. They had a private dinner at Medeo, which is one of the fanciest Italian restaurants in Beverly Hills. They have been jetting back and forth forth between Miami and the Bahamas together. So this is definitely the hottest couple of the year so far. Now it should just be interesting to see how long they'll last.
Wow, that's big news. Well,
huge
of course,
news.
A-Rod, you know, he sort of has a reputation for liking the pop celebrities.
Exactly. So, of course, A-Rod. J-Rod is in my head so much lately. But A-Rod has, of course, famously dated Madonna in the past, as well as Cameron Diaz. So Jennifer Lopez is the next one on a long list of celebrities that he's dated. But, you know, Jennifer Lopez, who, of course, just got out of a long relationship with her much younger boyfriend, Casper Smart. You know, she has two children, just like Alex does. He has two daughters from her previous marriage. And of course, Jennifer has a daughter and a son. And we're not sure yet if the kids have met each other just yet, but they have a lot in common, Alex and Jennifer. They're both parents. They are both very close to their families. They're very dedicated to their careers. So on paper, this one seems like a good match.
Wow. Okay. Cool. Any other hot off-the-press entertainment news?
So, of course, Kate Hudson has a new boyfriend, Danny Akinola. Sorry, I can't excuse my pronunciation, but yeah, Danny Fujikawa. He's a musician, and of course, musicians are guys that Kate has only dated in the past. Her ex-husband, both of her ex-husbands have been musicians. So, yes, this is kind of a new flirty relationship that Kate Hudson is in, so good for her. And, yeah, now we're just, you know, excited for week two of Dancing with the Stars. A lot of people are surprised at how good former Bachelor Nick Viall has been, but I definitely do think that this season of Dance with the Stars is going to be between either Nancy Kerrigan and Simone Biles. So another Dance with the Stars season off to a start, and of course, everyone I know is watching it.
All right. Entertainment Tonight Senior News Editor Jennifer Peros, thanks as always. Well, you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jonah Cummings. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson recently underscored that human rights is integral to American foreign policy, noting that our values are our interests when it comes to human rights. In support of this interest, Congress mandates the State Department report every year on the human rights situation in countries around the world. These reports underscore our commitment to freedom, democracy, and the human rights guaranteed to all individuals around the world, including in Vietnam. While there has been some progress in recent years, there continue to be serious concerns about the human rights situation in Vietnam. The recently released human rights report for Vietnam highlights these continuing challenges. Among these were the Vietnamese government's continued restriction of citizens' political rights and fundamental freedoms of assembly, association, and expression. While many millions of Vietnamese retain access to the internet and social media sites, the government continued to exercise various forms of control over internet access. There was a significant increase in 2016 in the number of convictions of activists for peacefully expressing their views. There is also inadequate protection of citizens' due process rights, including protection against arbitrary detention. The State Department report highlighted problems of judicial independence and transparency, and detailed a number of instances over the past year where Vietnamese citizens were denied the right to a fair and expeditious trial. The Vietnamese government continued to constrain civil society in other ways as well, including by censoring the press and restricting the activities of NGOs. It is important that the government of Vietnam strengthen protection for human rights, religious freedom, and the rule of law. Doing so will bolster Vietnam's economy, help its people reach their full potential, and facilitate a deeper bilateral partnership with the United States.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For what's